It is time again for the Warren County Radio Bible School. And today we're going to go to our special feature. What we've been doing is looking at the life of Christ. And we're really in the middle of a lesson on the temptation of Christ when he was tempted in the wilderness. But we're going to stop where we are and take a different approach this morning while we talk about what we read from the Rock Cliff Review. Now, what that Rock Cliff Review is, it's the bulletin that we pass out on Sunday morning to those who visit with us. And in that bulletin, on most Sundays, is an article that I have written that has to do with the sermon that's going to be preached that morning. And so I'm going to read that to you today. And the title of that article and of that sermon is Without Honor in His Own Country. Now the text for the sermon that morning came from the book of Mark, chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. And I'll read that to you now. It says in Mark 6, beginning in verse 1, "And he went out from thence, and he cometh into his own country, and his disciples follow him. And when the Sabbath was come, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many hearing him were astonished, saying, Whence hath this man these things? And what is the wisdom that is given unto this man? And what mean such mighty works wrought by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and his brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended in him. And Jesus said unto them, A prophet is not without honor, save in his own country, and among his own kin, and in his own house. And he could there do no mighty work, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief." Now let me read to you from the Rock Cliff Review. John tells us that Jesus came into his own, and his own received him not. John 1 and verse 11. He is speaking generally of the Jews, but Jesus was not received in his own country. Matthew 13, 54 and 57, and Mark chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. His own country was Nazareth. Mary and Joseph were of Nazareth, and upon their return from Egypt, they made their home there. This village was a little south of the Sea of Galilee, about midway between the sea and the great sea, at the edge of the hills overlooking the coastal plain. It was not on the way to anything, so there was no real reason to pass by Nazareth except to go there. It was isolated and obscure. There is no mention of Nazareth in the Old Testament. Nazareth had a lowly reputation bordering on contempt. Nathanael said in John chapter 1 in verse 46, "Can any good thing come out of Nazareth?" When Jesus was called Jesus of Nazareth, there was an implication of his lowliness. Isaiah had said that the Messiah would be despised and rejected of men. He is one of the prophets that told of a lowly Messiah. That is why Matthew said in Matthew chapter 3 and verse 32, "He came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, He shall be called a Nazarene." Luke tells us of Jesus' coming to Nazareth in Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 32, how he stood in the synagogue and read from Isaiah, how he told them that they were seeing the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecies, how they rejected him, how he reminded them that Gentiles had accepted God when Israel had not, how they were filled with wrath and sought to cast him down headlong from the brow of their hill. He was without honor in his own country. It is in Nazareth that Matthew and Mark introduce us to Jesus' family. Matthew 13, 55 through 56, and Mark chapter 6 and verse 3. This is not the first time we have met them, and you might want to go back and read Mark 3, verses 31 through 35. But now, we have their names. Neither mention Joseph by name. So it is supposed that Joseph was now dead. Though not named, it is here that we learn that Joseph had been a carpenter, Matthew 13:55, and that Jesus himself had been a carpenter, Mark chapter 6 and verse 31. Jesus would have known what it was to earn bread by the sweat of his face. His work as a carpenter has forever dignified common manual labor. Those who think they are too dignified to labor as Jesus labored are indeed too dignified. No one should ever be ashamed of being a working person. Some should be ashamed that they are not. We have the names of his four brothers and the mention of his sisters. Matthew says all his sisters rather than both, which may indicate that he had three or more. At this time, the brothers of Jesus did not receive him as the Christ. James is later called James, the Lord's brother, in Galatians 1 and verse 19. But in James 1:1, he identified himself as the Lord's servant. Jude would later refer to himself as the servant of Jesus Christ and the brother of James in Jude chapter 1 and verse 1. The villagers of his own country were astonished at Jesus' teaching, Mark chapter 6 and verse 2, and offended at him, Mark chapter 6 and verse 3. And Jesus marveled because of their unbelief, Mark 6 and verse 6. Why the unbelief? They had the evidence of his wisdom, of his miracles, and of the testimony of others who had seen and heard, for faith cometh by hearing. Was it because of their familiarity with him? Because of envy of the attention he was receiving? Or because he was not the kind of Messiah that they had expected? The Nazarenes were too small, narrow, ignorant, backward, and bigoted to look past their own feet. One of the things we learn from this account is that unbelief is not intellectual. It sometimes parades itself as such, but it is a false garment. Unbelief and the abandonment of reason for bigotry. It is the abandonment of reason for bigotry. The evidence is abundant for those who would believe, but people who choose unbelief because men love darkness rather than light, and because their deeds were evil, John 3 and verse 19, with such evidence at hand, unbelief is a sign of mental laziness, inflated egos, and moral cowardice. It was not the prophet's fault that he was not received in his own country, and that his own received him not. Some who attain notoriety make themselves out to be something they are not, and his home folks know better. But this was not the case with Christ. If Jesus was not the Christ, then where did he learn such things? How did he do these mighty works? The deeper you look into the evidence, the more undeniable it is. There is no excuse for unbelief. His brothers did not believe, but they repented and became his servants. And you can too. Now that was the gist of the sermon that morning and the article from the Rockcliffe Review. I read from the Rockcliffe Review because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rockcliffe and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And with that, we want to return to the Sunday school lesson that we have been studying about the temptation of Jesus. We might want to put a plural on that, the temptations of Jesus. For after he was baptized and went into the wilderness, we know he was tempted 3 times. The devil came to him and said, "Command that these stones be made bread." And Jesus answered, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." And then Satan took him to the pinnacle of the temple and said, "Cast thyself down. It is written in the Psalms that God will give his angels charge concerning thee." And Jesus responded, "It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God." And now we come to the third temptation. This one is sometimes called Satan's masterpiece. We read it in Matthew chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. "Again the devil taketh him unto an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them. And he said unto him, All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me." This is the last temptation at this time, and it is the mightiest. It's been called Satan's masterpiece. In this, he throws off the mask and acknowledges that he is the prince of the world. From a lofty eminence, an exceeding high mountain, he spreads out before Jesus. In a moment of time, it says in Luke 4 and verse 5, "The kingdoms of the world and the glory of them." Jesus sees all, the luxury, the ease, the pomp, the splendor, the bright clouds, crowns, the dazzling glories, the wealth of the East, the culture and refinement of Greece, and the power and triumphant armies of Rome. Satan offers all this to Jesus, saying, "All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. For it hath been delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it." It says in verse 6 of the account of this in Luke chapter 4 and verse 6, "All authority and the glory of them, it shall be thine." This was the great temptation. The love of worldly power and glory is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, of human passions. But Satan told no lie. All this had been delivered to him. And he is, in John 14:30, called the prince of the world. It would have been no temptation to offer to Jesus that which Satan did not possess. Christ's kingdom, John 18:36, is not of this world. These are two different, very different kingdoms. The kingdom of the world is become the kingdom of our Lord and Christ, Revelation 11:15. Christ is the true king over all things. Oh, Satan may stomp and put his pride forth, and indeed he has influence in the ruling of the nations. But in the bottom line, it is God that rules over all and ever over all. And so we read in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10. "Then Jesus said to him, Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." Jesus felt the force of the temptation, but abhorred the thought and repelled the adversary with indignation. And we read the passage he quoted was from Deuteronomy 6 and verse 13. And again, Christ's defense was the word of God. It is written. This is sufficient. God is the creator and ruler of the universe, and to worship and serve him is man's only greatest good.